Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Carl Carlson. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Fred.
Hey. We've, you and I have talked about reliability engineering management in a number of different ways. And we've been, I hesitate to think about how long we've been working on a book and on the topic, but I think we very quickly got an outline and topics, and we started to pull together material. And I know I'm kind of grinding through chapter 3. I think I've got about a dozen more pages or segments to write. So for folks that are listening, Carl and I are working on it, and it's making slow progress, but we're charging ahead with that. If I remember right, Carl, I think I have chapter 1 and 2 to give you my edits on. So
okay, Fred.
I'll make a public commitment here to get him back to you.
All right.
And but one of the questions that comes up in the book, and both you and I have done this in our practices and when we worked in organizations, is we've conducted assessments. We've looked at a design team or a vendor or a product line, and with the intent of going to talk to the people in that organization to say, well, what is the state of your reliability program or of your reliability activities? And the key to the assessment, and you and I have talked about this before, is, well, how do you can't just walk in and see it, right? It's not on the wall. It's not a piece of equipment. It's not the software tools they use. But the notion is, well, how do you elicit a conversation that generates a concept of what it is they do? Is that similar to you're thinking about when you go into doing an assessment, or do you come at it a little different way?
No, that's very similar, Fred. I would also frame this for our listeners that this does not have to be a conversation or a podcast about an outside consultant going into a company. Mm-hmm. This is also how a practitioner inside of a company can assess the reliability capability within their own organization. The types of questions that we'll talk about today apply not only for someone coming outside into a company, but also how do you work inside of a company and really, with eyes wide open and an open mind, take a look at the hard facts of where you are today on the subject of reliability capability.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how I learned it. And I remember Dick Moss was still at Hewlett-Packard when I basically got the charter to go do a series of assessments internally. And his comment was, well, there's only a couple of things you can do from a corporate group, and which is where I was working. And he said, you can form a committee or you can do a survey. And the assessment, the way I learned it or was chartered to go do it, was really at a survey. But then we spent a couple of hours talking about, well, you can't just walk in and say, so what is your reliability program? You probably will get a blank stare or a set of slides that is what they think they do, which is different than what they actually do.
Yes, indeed.
In many cases.
Well, and the other thing is we have to overcome our own biases. I don't know of any reliability practitioner that doesn't have certain tools that they emphasize for a lot of different reasons. And sometimes the reasons are not entirely rational. So some people may be experts in Taguchi methods, and others might be experts in FMEA, and others might be. And so it's just a natural tendency to bias those tools.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the questioning skill is to set aside your biases and listen, ask questions and listen, and then evaluate in a balanced way.
Well, that's the same principle with any audit or assessment, is you're trying to gather your information about what they do. And that, I agree with you, Carl, it is hard to not turn into a teaching mode. If you ask a question, say, about HALT testing, and they go, well, what is that? Then you pull out the lesson plan, basically, which is not the purpose of being there.
Exactly. So it does help to practice questioning. I did some in research for chapter 4 of our book, which is on the gap assessment, mm-hmm. which includes the questioning. I read a series of articles. One of them was called The Art of Questioning. And I recall that there's some things you do and some things you don't do on questioning. One is there's some things to avoid. One would be a yes or no. It's not too helpful to ask questions that can be answered yes or no. It really is a thought stopper and a closure. There's leading questions are not necessarily good.
Yeah. So an example, I think the yes, no one is do you do HALT testing? It's a yes, no. And, but we don't know the rationale behind why they do it or don't do it.
Exactly.
And then the second part there is a question is like, so why don't you do HALT testing?
Right. No, you can. So it does help to practice, how to ask questions. Some of the things I remember from the article is be curious, be interested.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just there. You're not purely auditing. You're actually, it helps to draw out the person, to show your interest, show your passion. It helps to be open-ended, using what, how, and why type questions. It helps to be engaged. And one that I've learned that's really hard to teach is digging deeper. Like when to dig deeper and when to take what you got and move on.
Well, and that, you know, one of the things I learned from Dick Moss, and he had done surveys across HP, and it's in the Reliability Engineering and Management Handbook that he's a co-author of or co-editor of. He said, ask the question of to what extent do you use X tool, you know, the HALT testing, for example. To what extent do you do something? And then that notion of drawing it out is when they say, oh, we use it. Well, then how do you use it? Or how does it influence decisions? Or how do you find it being, I mean, how do you judge whether it's a good failure mechanism or not? Do you have an example of that? Or tell me more about, and then pick a topic that they mentioned. Would those be examples of it, what they would be good with that article?
Absolutely, Fred. In fact, based on our conversations when we were researching this particular chapter, I recall that you had mentioned that about your experience with Moss, and those that's like a template, so to speak, for the right way to ask about methods. So when you get to taking FMEA or HALT or reliability allocation, I really agree that to what extent do you use is open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
It engages, it invites conversation. It's a variable. It's not a yes or no. Because the extent that someone uses a tool, it's not going to be necessarily 0 or 100%. It's going to be somewhere in between.
That's right. And one of the things that I started doing early in it, and what Dick had, Moss had done, was he had a scoring system. And I very quickly realized that the scoring system, you know, when I asked to what extent do you do HALT testing, do you do it, do you not know what it is, or you never do it, it's a zero, and do it all the time, 100%, it's a high score. I think I used a 0 to 5, 0 to 4 scale.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the scoring had really nothing to do with the objective of the assessment. But what it did is that when I asked an engineer, in particular an engineer, to first score their engagement with that tool and then it justify their score, it ended up working marvelously. So when I realized the scoring didn't really matter, as I eliminated it from the questioning, I just said, to what extent do you do halt testing? And I got a very guarded answer all the time. And so I experimented with adding the scoring back into it. And it would say, oh, it's a 3. Well, what do you mean by 3? And right. And then, after like 2 or 3 questions of that routine, they would very quickly give me a score and then justify it. I didn't even have to ask.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. I think there's something implicit that it might be helpful to share with our listeners. When you're asking questions about methods or tools or procedures, and you use phrases like, to what extent do you use that? How do you use it? And then getting examples. What's implicit and maybe needs to be discussed is I always have in my mind the quality of the tool, what a good tool application looks like. Mm-hmm. So I have a sense for what a good halt project looks like, what a good FME looks like, what a good reliability flowdown looks like, what good reliability requirements looks like. And when I ask what extent they use or how do they use or why they use and look at examples, I'm comparing it to my vision for what a good quality tool would be. So it's not a check off, did they do it or not? It's did they do it well? Did they do it correctly? Did they do it to a value-added result?
Well, I think comparing it internally is, I tried to guard against that. I know it's happening, but did it give them the objective they were looking for? Are they accomplishing what they set out as their objective? So if they say early on, I ask about reliability goals for the organization, where's their position in the market, those kinds of things. And then as they go through the tools, did that move them forward to achieving that? So they may be using HALT in a new or novel way. And I, you know, I've learned a lot going through these different organizations of how they assemble and use the various approaches and techniques. And some are pretty novel and extremely useful for them. So if I judged it against what I thought a good program was, I would probably miss that. And it goes back to your listening part, I think.
Great point. Great point. It goes back to having the open mind, having some humility, always learning. So excellent point, Fred.
Yeah, and it goes back to the curiosity part is, and that's where it draws the, you know, I would think, and I'm thinking of a number of circumstances where I ask about halt testing and go, oh, we never use that. That overstresses the product and just breaks it. And it is really hard not to say, you know, in your circumstance with the new novel designs you're doing, this style of evaluation would be very helpful for you.
Yes.
You know, so you have to just make a note and come back later with the recommendations to say, you know, one way to improve your program would be look at this technique or process. But there's a different issue there. I think part of the listening is going, well, what's behind that thought process of why they just carte blanche refuse to use that tool? Is it a management structure piece, or is it an engineer, a significant influencer doesn't have buy-in to that program or idea, doesn't understand it? Is there been some bad practices in the past where it was misused and it gave that tool or technique a bad rap? The tool itself is innocent. It's how it gets implemented and thought about in the organization. So if we're trying to assess their program, we're really looking at what's their thought process of selecting a tool.
Excellent. I also I want to broaden this out a little bit on our discussion, and I'm not sure how you do this. I'll just explain how I do it. Mm-hmm. Reliability tools and methods is really one segment of a broader set of questions and assessments
mm-hmm.
that I'm doing with a company. I'll look at things like their, what I call their strategic vision. In other words, where do they want to be in 1 year, 2 year, 5 years? I'll look at what types of reliability plans they've had in the past,
mm-hmm.
how well they've worked or not,
mm-hmm.
have they been executed? I'll look at their the reliability data that they've been gathering. Is it useful? How well it's constructed? How it's used? I'll look at supplier reliability, manufacturing reliability. We'll look at their testing, service and maintenance, if that's part of the scope.
Mm-hmm.
And then clearly, and I know you share this, we look at the organizational resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those, and by that I also mean integration with engineering processes. So all of those are part of the scope of the questions. And I didn't want the audience to think we were just questioning about methods and tools.
Yeah, it's very similar style of questioning. And it's, you know, to what extent do you engage your, you know, flow down your reliability requirements to your suppliers? And
mm-hmm.
and how well is that received? And what kind of issues have you had communicating what your reliability requirements? And so it's a very similar vein of questioning. Yet I agree completely. It's across the entire spectrum of the life cycle. And in some organizations, I've sat down with the marketing and sales team and field service mm-hmm. teams and asked how do they interact with these parts to it.
So there's really a preliminary step, which is agreeing on or identifying or establishing the scope of your assessment.
Right.
Because then that'll lay out the types of questions. I usually walk in with at least a one-page outline
mm-hmm.
of the scope and the categories of questions. So that'll tell me whether I'm including past reliability plans, whether I'm including suppliers, whether I'm including manufacturing or service, those categories of questions. And then you can use the that style or those types of questions to what extent and how and examples in those different categories.
One of the things I don't want to miss in this is that in order to get decent answers or honest answers from these style of questionings, is the person you're talking to has to believe they're not being judged. They have to be safe. And we see this in surveys all the time. It's, you know, we're gathering data to help make recommendations for your organization, or if you're doing it internally, is we're looking for opportunities to improve or best practices to share. We want to reinforce the good stuff and improve the things that could help the program. We're going to report this anonymously. There's a feedback mechanism so you can see the data we've gathered and make adjustments or corrections. And I was down in San Diego at the Hewlett-Packard site there, and it just happened that the CEO was visiting the site and making a big presentation. And the first question with the first person I talked to was, "Did you fly down with the CEO? Like, are you the corporate auditor kind of
yes.
thing? And is this reported right straight back to the boss?" And I'm like, No, I flew coach, not on the
yeah.
private jet.
Yeah,
no, I work in the building next door. We never see her,
Yeah. Fred, do you think it's better to do the questions, ask questions one-on-one or with a group?
I prefer the one-on-one.
Same here.
It takes a little more time, and some of it's repetitive. From my point of view, from the people I'm talking to, it's not. The few times I've worked with groups, there's almost always a deference to somebody in the group calling the shots. And I sense that they're telling me what they think the group thinks they should say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I explained that right. But
no, you did it perfectly. I have the same feedback. I have done it both ways, but almost always now. I might start with a meeting
mm-hmm.
just to explain the process and then branch off into individual interviews.
And the questions to ask are really focused on that underlying the whole of activity is, I want to understand how things get done. You know, where's the information flows? Where are the decisions made? What are the constraints and focuses of what's driving the types of programs and tools you're using? And that goes back to that curiosity. I think that's a great point, Carl, is that we're trying to see something that is generally invisible and almost never understood by any one person within an organization. So we come in with a unique perspective and talk to a range of people and get to see something that even the organization probably is not aware of.
Yeah, yes. What do you think the end result of questions, in other words, what's the deliverable?
Well, what I did when I was internal and still do as a consultant is one is just a reflection of what they do. It's just because what I found is no one person, whether a design engineer or a reliability manager or a supply chain engineer, none of them understand all of the pieces that fit together that results in the product reliability that they produce. So part of it is just reflecting, here's where they are in the maturity matrix. Here's where and what they do, and to some extent, why they do what they do. Here's what the connections are. And then right on top of that then is, in almost every case, is then, well, here's the things you do well. Here's the things that need improvement. And here's the things that if you change will help you make improvements. And so it ends up being like an audit or an assessment, but with the reflection of what they do and how they can make steps to make improvements.
Yes, good. I look at it the same way, but I also add in one of the outcomes that I want is what in chapter 4 we call the reliability gap assessment, mm-hmm. and which might be a list of gaps. So an end result of you might interview 15 people and go and look, not just interview, but actually go and look and see, and then look at examples and then further questions. But then I try to summarize that into a list of gaps. And then those gaps become the raw material for the reliability plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we use different terminology for it. I would say those are the areas for improvement or weaknesses.
Yep.
And, you know, sometimes it's simple. They're not aware of a particular tool or technique, and a little bit of education and practice with it, they would fill in an area to find defects that maybe they don't use FMEA or HALT testing at all, but they're constantly surprised late in the program. Well, let's take a look earlier. That's mm-hmm. what I would call a gap.
mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Yeah. Well, the premise of this topic was, well, what questions to ask? And it's not as simple as here's, you know, 8 survey questions, ask them exactly the same way every time. Yeah. It really is. And hopefully, Carl, you'll have a link to that article we can add into the show notes that frames mm-hmm. the open-ended questions, and that you're there to listen and to set aside your filters and biases. And so you can really hear what's going on. You know you're successful when you send the summary and here's the reflection of your organization back to your sponsor or your boss or whoever. And I got one of those phone calls after I sent a report back in HP, and she called and said, "You were only here for a day. How do you know so much about our program?" It's amazing what you can learn in, say, 5 to 8 one-hour interviews by asking those open-ended questions, by exploring, being curious, and then letting that sink in and then write it down. Here's what we saw. Here's what you do. Here's the flow of information, of decision-making, of the rationale for priorities that you have, all those things. Are bits and pieces that make up that invisible reliability program.
Yeah. Very good.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. And thanks, Carl. Great topic. I know that we've been so busy over the, oh, geez, seems like a couple of years. But I'm glad you brought it up because it's going to energize me to get my parts of that book put together and back out to you.
You're on public record now.
That's right. That's right. All right, Carl. Well, thanks much. And if listening to this is, you can find pieces of this on the Ascendo Reliability site and ascendoreliability.com underneath ebooks. There's a maturity matrix and reliability maturity, and it includes an outline of how to do an assessment a couple different ways. And so that's kind of the raw, some of the raw material Carl and I are using. But feel free to download those. It's free if you join the site, which is also free. And stay tuned and let us know what kinds of things you would look for in a book on reliability engineering management. We're still early enough in the process that we certainly can take feedback and so on and incorporate that into what we put together. So thanks again, Carl. Great topic. And we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.